You've reached another stunning episode of the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the marvelous Mike Dudley, followed as always by my co-host, cohort, and youngest brother.
MD3 Marcus Dudley checking in on the YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live from the Whatcha Been Watching studios right here in Tallahassee, Florida, in the shadows of Dope Campbell Stadium. I think this is technically WBW Studio 3 now. We're admirals of the fleet of studios. So check us out, please, before we get anywhere else. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, want to write us in, want to get to know us, want to tell us how bad we suck at our jobs, we are still waiting for that very first Dear Ass Faces email.
That's right.
You can do all of that at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. Where else can they find us, my brother?
They can find us online at facebook.com/DudleyBrosPodcast or Instagram on, is it whatchabeenwatchin?
At whatchabeenwatchin.
At whatchabeenwatchin, yeah. Other than that, you know, we out there in the streets. I was selling Rottweiler and Shih Tzu puppies for, you know, mega cheap.
And I was scooping poop.
We all have our side hustles.
You can also, definitively look for the lovely banner done by the MKD Art. Right?
That's right. And shout out to Ketsa.
Yeah.
For the jam and beat, always bright.
Yeah, man. Sorry for botching your name for so long. Our heart was in the right place. I will say this, though. I had somebody reach out to me when we dropped our lovely episode, which was a phenomenal episode. Truly same old Leon Phelps genius. When we did our episode 69, I had somebody, they're so, and this is a testament to the creator of it, our middle duddies himself, I guess in terms of marketing and name brand recognition, when we didn't have the banner up, They were like, I don't know if this is the right podcast or what. Oh, they were afraid to play it in front of their kids.
Yeah, because I put that Photoshop image of Leon Phelps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, which we do occasionally, but those are always on purpose. I know we've had Sean Connery and his pageantry of the Highlander before, and we had the phenomenal poster of the man who ate 40 rotisserie chickens before.
That man is a legend to this day.
He's the What You've Been Watching Wall of Fame for sure. He's never even been in a
movie. He's never done a movie.
But I just thought that was awesome. I thought that was a good compliment to Matthew to have his banner be associated with WBW like that. So
it's like when they changed the Pepsi logo, everybody went, like, what?
What the hell is this? Yeah. So anyways, man, what's going on with you, dude?
Oh, man. Dog days of summer. Hurricane season's great. Same old Florida bullshit.
No, sir. We're moving into a phenomenal season, which is the foosball season, which I'm very, very, very happy about myself.
I see you've donned your Florida State togs.
Oh, it's been all week. Every day this week. That's collared right. Shirt at the office, collared shirt the next day at the office, old jersey today. We kick off in Ireland. By the time you see this, I don't know what our record will be. Hopefully we'll be a pretty decent team, though. You know, I'm talking about the great Florida State, of course. Man, I'm fired up about it. I don't ask for much in life. I'll do all your chores that you want me to ask, but just during those 3 hours, even if we want to go to dinner, go to lunch, whatever, I'm fine to go. I will be as respectful as I can. Just make sure that I can see a TV.
That's right.
Or listen to it on the radio. Right. I mean, it's a fair request. I'm upfront about it, you know.
God damn it, I give you so much and ask for so little.
So precious little in return.
When's my time, Lord? When's my time?
There's just chaos right now. I'm looking forward to my life is crazy right now. It'll reveal itself on the podcast in due time, but it's not why the people listen, Michael. That is not why. Anything else you need to check in with? Anything else going on in the world of?
Oh no! Shout out to Mr. A1 for the interlude music, as always. Yeah.
Find my guy, a1reality.music@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
I'm telling you, I'll start posting some. I put his YouTube channel in some of them. I'm telling you, he's got all the flavors you need. So if you're looking for anything.
That jam that he sent us, the old school, like, Barry White slow baby making jam music that we put on for the episode 69.
Yeah.
I literally was listening to that the other night and was like, damn, I would actually, like, put this on and be serious and be like, yeah, baby, here we go.
He makes, as T-Pain says,
I want to eat bologna off your booty.
As T-Pain says, he makes a hit when he grazes the button.
That's right.
So, anyways, that's another hero. That's a person I'd love to have on the show is the old T-Pain, but that's a different podcast. So without any further ado, then, the reason why people tune in week out, my brother, they need to know what you've been watching, man.
My man, I recently rewatched, because I am in this mode now where I'm sharing, you know, sharing my childhood favorites with the kids and sort of introducing them to the classics. We watched the classic Fern Gully.
I'm Batty, Batty, Batty. That's right. How the song goes.
That's right. Yeah. With Robin Williams playing. Was he genetically manipulated bat? Anyway.
He talked. That's all I know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie since I was probably like 12 years old.
They just gave Robin Williams a bunch of cocaine. We're like, you're a bat. Go.
There's a song at some point. Oh, man. Does it live up to it? Does it still play well?
I think so. I mean, it's a little dated in its references and stuff like that. I mean, it came out in, God, I want to say like 90...
Early 90s, yeah.
92 maybe, something like that. But yeah, it's basically Fern Gully, a magical glen in some unnamed country. I'm not real sure. It's in a rainforest, but is threatened when a villainous pollution cloud by the name of Hexus, played by the incomparable Tim Curry.
I do remember that.
Takes over this, basically this, it's this massive wood cutting machine and turns it into Fern Gully, basically. And, Krista, the, I guess like sorcerer fairy or in training or whatever. She's like, they never really explain it, but, she accidentally shrinks down a human named Zach, and they have to unite to fight Hexus and save Fern Gully.
Is that the one that has all the red X's on the trees or something like that? Yep. Yeah. Yep. See, there's weird like images I remember in my mind from that movie. Because, again, I saw it a fair amount when it came out because I was the target audience. And, I probably haven't seen it. So, couldn't have been more than 12, like, at the age of 12.
Sure,
I'd be surprised if I saw it, you know, any later than that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I probably would have been 10 or 11 when that came out, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, how was it, though? Does it still hold up? I mean, you said some of the references are dated, and it's like the Animaniacs where they were saying
things. Well, I mean, you know, they have a dude listening to a Walkman, which...
is timeless.
Which is the finest piece of equipment ever created by man and nigh indestructible. I guarantee if you look in your house right now, you have a Walkman somewhere.
Are you talking about the tape player or the Discman?
The tape player.
Yeah, the tape players, yeah. Yeah. Those were nice, man. I'm not going to lie. I wish we could go back to that. Those were nice. Just put your little cassette on. You could make it off the radio and do your thing for a little bit.
That's right. That's
You're largely left alone.
But yeah, it's really good. It's there's a fair clip of musical numbers. I think it was Don Bluth that did it.
I think so. I think the animation style leads me to tell you that you're correct, but this is also the Wild Speculation Podcast.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty heavy-handed environmental message.
Yeah, as I say, they don't bury the lead on that one.
No. But it's good. I mean, you know, Tim Curry sings. He has this really delicious song about how he wants to pollute the planet, and it's just dripping with villainy, and like, he's not holding anything back, and he's doing, you know, I mean, it's Tim Curry.
Like, yeah, I was like, why are you going to cast Tim Curry to be like, hey, we really need you to give a subdued performance here. Like, don't cast Tim Curry, dude.
So we want like Tim Curry, but like 15% curry.
Dial it down the curry, the less spicy curry, as it were. Oh, man. No, I always liked that movie growing up, though. There was a movie theater in the Tallahassee Mall where it only had two theaters. It was an A and a B.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
I don't remember the name of it, but that's where I first saw that
movie. Yeah, that's a throwback. That's from like way back in the day.
Yeah, that was back when the old Northwood Mall still existed, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, buddy. Tallahassee, we're making references for about eight people.
Welcome
right now
to the We're Old Podcast.
Yeah, for real. It's weird that cassette, you have certain memories in your mind where like, I don't think I had ever been to that theater before or after watching that movie. But I remember watching that movie there.
Right, sure. Like, yeah.
So, either way. Do you want to rate it, review it?
I mean, yeah, it's a cute, charming little environmental message movie. It's got fairies, it's got singing lizards, it's got Tim Curry being delectably vicious and evil in it. I mean, what more do you want? Robin Williams
being
Robin Williams
playing Batty.
Yeah, I think it's only like 88 minutes. It's definitely under 90 minutes, and so you're in and out before you even know it. So,
That's good.
It's a fun little jaunt.
What would you rate it, sir?
I'm going to give it 3 lines of cocaine for Robin Williams.
So just a tease, just enough to make you really want some more.
Just enough to give him that little zhuzh to get, you know, get through the afternoon.
About a zhuzh. Oh, man, we got to loosen up on that. This is a true What You Been Watching episode. Actually, we've been really structured with a lot of things, and, you know, we snuck in the Deadpool one and diving deep on some things. So if you got anything in front of you at the house, go ahead and raise it. If you're at work, go ahead and just take a minute and take a couple deep breaths, and we're going to dive into this true What You Been Watching, where we truly catch up on what the hell each other's been watching.
That's right. That's right.
The true point of the show day today. What else you got for me, my friend?
Let's see. After that, I watched Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
With the great Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk and, who's the other guy?
I know his face.
Tyler Labine.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Tyler Labine. Basically, it's a horror movie. It's a classic horror slasher movie where the innocent teens end up being the villains and murdering themselves in various comical ways. So. Huh. Long story short, these two rednecks, Tucker and Dale, played by, you know, Alan Tudyk and Tyler Labine, go up to their the cabin that they just bought on this, like, lakeside, you know, mountain retreat, whatever. And of course,
Crystal Lake situation.
Yeah, Crystal Lake situation. And of course, it's, you know, run down, and there's nails popping out of everywhere, and whoever was there before decorated in, like, saw blades and antlers and decapitated dolls and stuff like that. And they're like, this place is perfect. It just needs a little work.
Nice.
So, and then invariably they run afoul of these, you know, stoner, you know, college kids that are out in the woods for fornication and drug use and, you know,
drinking beers, skinny dipping,
sodomites, most likely.
What a good word. Anyway.
And so anyway, the college kids, of course, mistaken identity, believe that the two hapless, you know, nitwits are psycho hillbilly killers and decide to retaliate. One of them bumps her head. And so they lovingly take her back to the cabin to, like, help her out and make sure that she's okay. They end up forming a bond, and then the rest of her friends try to assault the cabin and end up murdering and impaling themselves in stupid, violent, vigorous ways.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer for it. I know it has a real cult following.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to see the movie. I just, one of those ones I've never gotten around to. It seems very campy and very, like,
it is very campy. Yeah.
Like a Shaun of the Dead-esque kind of thing.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, it's essentially, you know, it's what if the hillbillies were the protagonists? And, right. You know, like, there's a scene where a kid comes running at one of them with a pocket knife, and he's all, you know, like, "Rah, die, you motherfucker!" And then, like, he just trips over a root and falls into a wood chipper face first. And so, of course, you know, Tucker and Dale are trying to pull him out, and, like, "You get his leg, you get his other leg," and, like, it's just spurting blood everywhere, and they pull out half a dude, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna have a tough time explaining this one." You know, it's classic Abbott and Costello buffoonery.
Yeah, I'm all about some buffoonery. Which, reminder, I think I'm ready to incorporate another person into the Legion of Goon, by the way.
Oh, nice.
He's been right in front of my face this whole time.
Oh.
Which, we're taking that word back, so.
Goonery?
Yes, goonery, all form. It's not what you think it is. Right. We're old
when
school.
You Google it, you will get our reference, yeah, not whatever. The other thing.
Anyways, I didn't mean to tangent there, but. Sounds like some good old-fashioned buffoonery was happening here, which is, you know, in the same ballpark of what we were talking about, but not quite the same thing. So, no, I do want to watch that movie, though. Like I said, I just haven't gotten around to it. There's so much content now. It's like,
oh, you said you had somebody for the goonery.
Oh, you want me to just dive into it
now? Yeah. Don't leave me hanging like that.
I'm sorry. I thought we were going to dive into it later. In my quest to finally
I give it two hapless idiots that never did nothing wrong.
Oh, nice. There you go. And plus, it's got the great Alan Tudyk, so that's worth a couple points already.
And he speaks with a pretty hilarious southern, like, Appalachia hillbilly accent.
We were talking about he might be the king of genre, man. He's working his way up there. And if he's not on the What You Been Watching Wall of Fame, he's like the log. There is a log jam, much like the NFL Hall of Fame.
I'll tell you what.
He's working his way up there, though.
If he could sing and dance, he might match Sammy Rocks.
Oh, Sammy Rocks is...
All Alan Tudyk has to do is just start dancing in every movie.
Yeah. It's a tough ask. His agent will get right on that. But no, in my quest to finally maybe fulfill a promise that I made over 2 years ago, to start watching some BoJack Horseman and actually complete it.
Yes.
I'm not there yet, so we're not there. But man, I've thought long and hard about it, and the Legion of Goon is much tougher to get into than the Watchmen Watching Wall of Fame. It's just stricter parameters.
Sure.
There's certain things that just got to happen. There's certain people that I'm considering. And after going back and watching it, I am officially graduating one man to join those of the guys in the Three Ninjas.
Uh-huh.
And his name is one Todd Chavez from BoJack Horseman. You see, and here's the reason why. A lot of people think that being a goon means that you have to be some lower level henchman. Gooning, you know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily have ill intent.
Sure.
It just means to be, can you be slapsticky? Can you just be kind of in your own world? Can you just be a bit of a buffoon, a bit of a Moran, but also have the best of intentions? Why, yes, you can.
We're looking for top tier, like, second man.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, yes. You know what I mean? And so after much consideration, I think that he's been in front of my face. And he actually says in the show that he always thought about having a career in gooning. And so when he said, I said, oh my God, it's been right in my face this whole time. You know, he has the best of intentions in doing what he does, but his plans just seem to fall through. Also, wildly successful, multi-million-dollar businessman. His resume is nothing to play with. But he's a victim of his own success, too, and his whims and his whimsy get in the way of his own good sometimes.
You know what? I'll buy that. I think one Todd Chavez might be top-tier goonery.
He's
now, by the same contrast, would we also have to include Charlie Day from Always Sunny? Because is that like the Owen Hart rule? Like he's too good to be like top boy.
Charlie Day is a hell of a suggestion, actually.
But he might be too good. You know what I mean?
Like, it's a different. I don't know if I can class. He's good at what he does, and he's certainly right there. Now, when he and Danny DeVito are together as the gruesome twosome. That
top tier goonery.
That is something I might consider, but we got to get a bigger body of work.
Okay.
There's a lot going out there, but when you're talking about the gruesome twosome, that's quality gooning. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's a subtle difference. It's like there's certain things that you can't describe, but you just know it when you see it.
Like pornography.
No, I definitely know that. No, there's certain terminologies in life where you're like, I can't describe to you what it is, but I'll know what it is when I see it.
Sure.
And Todd Chavez, welcome to the Legion of Goons, sir.
I'll buy it for sure.
And we
welcome you, sir.
It's a hell of an honor. It's a hell of an honor. So, Aaron Paul, you'll be getting your certificate here, which don't exist. He'll randomly just get a sticker and be like, what the hell is this? Get that to your agent.
It's just written in crayon, like, good job.
Welcome
to Legion of Goon.
Other inductees, and I'll list the guys from the
Three Ninjas. Turn over.
I'll list the guys from the Three Ninjas, and I'll be like, I guess this is an honor? But you really should. It's much stricter standards than the old What You've Been Watching Wall of Fame.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, I don't know that was a tangent, but when you said buffoonery, it reminded me.
No, it's good.
That struck me out. Like, I was watching, but it was like 11:30, almost pushing midnight. I'm like, wait a second. I might be on to something here.
Right on.
So welcome to it. Continue, please, sir, with what you've been watching.
Let's see. After that, I watched the classic 80s teen drama, Heathers.
Confession?
Uh-huh.
Never seen that movie. In its entirety. I know you've had it on at a party before, and I came down like halfway through and I was like, yeah, I'm out.
Right.
There's
too many chicks in this. I'm not watching this.
I didn't want to jump in halfway was all it was. And I know it's like it's a well-beloved cult classic.
Yeah, for sure.
Never gotten around to it.
I mean, essentially it's the original Mean Girls, but it's a vengeance story. Of Mean Girls. So I guess, yeah, Mean Girls, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, Shannon Doherty and...
who, rest in peace.
Who, RIP, for sure. Yeah,
old
yeah,
Shando,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 90210, Mallrats, Charmed.
Charmed, yeah.
That was a good one.
Cameos as Shannon Doherty.
That's right.
On Cameo.
That's right.
You know, quite the back catalog. Gotta cycle through, man.
Yeah. Christian Slater, Winona Ryder, basically
all the IT people of that time.
Oh, for sure. Basically, Christian Slater and Winona Ryder form a pact to take out the, and I mean take out as in dispatch with a permanent fashion,
uh-huh.
the most popular and bitchiest girls in the school, all named Heather.
Heather.
So
yeah.
The Heathers. Yeah, I mean, great. It's like...
It's like Mean Girls, but...
I was going to say, it's like Judd Apatow, but with a way darker twist.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a darker director that I could make a comparison to. But yeah, Judd Apatow with like a goth twist would be the best example I could give.
Okay. So like some of those dark comedies go like Danny McBride's... what's his name? He directed Foot Fist Way and... I can't think of his name right now, mm-hmm. but he does some dark comedies too, like
sure.
Observe and Report and stuff like that. So something like that maybe, or have you seen those movies?
I haven't seen Observe and Report.
I'm trying to think of somebody else then, but...
Anyway, but it's classic. I mean...
I mixed that movie up with the movie Jawbreaker, where they...
That would be a 90s version of that, yeah.
Yeah, that's the movie where they kind of do the same thing, and as a prank, they
kidnap the popular girl, and they stuff a jawbreaker in her mouth, and she ends up dying
suffocating.
In a truck.
Yeah. Okay, so I've seen that movie, and I think I mix that up with... I've seen Heathers, I'm like, yeah! And then I'm actually just pulling from the movie Jawbreaker.
It's all the same genre, which that's another great pull. You know, if you want to see the progression of how you get to, you know, the PG version of that would be... Or I guess PG-13 version would be Mean Girls.
Yeah, which is a great movie.
I agree. They're doing a musical of it now.
They've already done it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's already out, yeah. It was on Broadway for like...
Fuck me for not paying attention,
yeah.
I guess.
No, I'm just saying it already came out and was released, yeah. Yeah, well, it was on Broadway forever, and then they just adapted the Broadway version to the screen. So,
okay.
Yeah, so, hey. Tina Fey still getting that. But they had Tim Meadows in it, so I'm
all
good.
You talking about Leon Felton?
Leon Felton. Yeah, he's a Watchmen watching Wall of Fame for two performances.
That's right. That's it.
Like, we discount his tenure. If, like, the ladies' man only existed in movie form, it would be that and just... I'm saying, and you never paid for drugs.
Not once. That's right.
Which we got it. Anyways, we'll dive on Dewey Cox next time. That'll be the...
Oh, that should be another good
deep
dive.
3-part episode. Yeah, no, Heathers. It's, again, man, I'm repeating myself. It's a movie I've always wanted to see. I know some people absolutely love that movie. I understand that it was all, like I said, the it people of that time. Christian Slater was the dreamboat. Shannon Doherty, I had a crush on, you know.
Sure, yeah.
The Winona Ryder, she was the it girl for a while, which I'm glad to see her coming back in Beetlejuice. So,
yeah.
I'll have to check that one out, though, and we'll get back to you on that one. But what do you rate Heathers? In terms of, like, the cult classics, where do you think it rates?
Oh, in terms of a cult classic?
Yeah, like, I mean, amongst some of the other stuff.
I mean, is it as good as Tokyo Gore Police? No. But is it at least as good as, say, like Eraserhead or like some of those other genre movies that take really wild swings to not only elevate but subvert the genre? For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Realistically, I'm going to give it not enough Dead Heathers.
Oh, nice. All right. Does it still hold up to today's standard? I know some of those movies feel very of the time. Hyperbolic or whatever?
Well, the climax of the movie is Christian Slater sets up a bomb in order to just kill the whole school and make it look like it was a school-wide suicide pact. And so...
I did not expect you to take it there.
Yeah. And in a post-Columbine world, like I don't know how well that holds up. I will say that it's at least so gratuitous and so far-fetched that there's a little bit of a comedy angle there to it. But in light of current, ongoing, recent events, maybe not so much.
Yeah. No, I get you, though. I get you. It does seem... When you said that, I can already tell, like, wow, there must have been some real wacky chain of events that led them to that point
where this is
the final solution or whatever. So.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, well, cool. I'll check it out, man. Like I said, I feel bad, but this is a true what you've been watching, where I'm just checking in on my eldest brother, seeing what the hell he's got going on movie-wise. So deal with it, people.
Let's see. After that, I watched... what's on my list? Oh, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
We can definitely talk that movie. Do you think... Michel Gondry.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more of that guy. He's the director of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
He hasn't really done a lot since then.
He did the movie Be Kind Rewind with Mos Def and Jack Black.
Really?
Yeah. And then he did...
I saw that, and that is such... Like, the two movies are so dramatically different in terms of style.
If you watch for certain things when they do the sweeted versions of the movie, that's like when they... The premise of that movie, which we'll dive into Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind here in a second, but we're talking about Michel Gondry, the director,
sure.
French man.
Thanks for keeping up.
Yeah. We're talking about his catalog, and he does a movie with Mos Def, who I love, Mighty Mos, and Jack Black called Be Kind Rewind, where Jack Black plays a bumbling idiot who erases every video in the video store with magnetism. So then before the owner of the store comes back, they make really shitty bootleg versions right. of these movies, and they call it being sweeted.
Right.
And so,
like RoboCop, like wearing, you know, painted tissue boxes and cardboard boxes and stuff like, and a football helmet, you know?
Yeah. But if you watch the sequence of that movie, you can see Michel Gondry's, like, you can see how he got to there in Eternal Sunshine. You can see a lot of his visual cues.
There's a connective thread directorially.
Yeah, he knows his way around a camera for sure. And he did. He also did Green Hornet.
The shitty Seth Rogen.
Which he tried to say, if you watch that movie directorially, there's some cool shots in there. So, I mean.
Yeah, that
seemed to be doomed from the word. That movie had so many rewrites and stuff. And then they're like, let's try to cash in on Seth Rogen. And let's get a good director.
It was
just the whole thing was. So he did that. And he also did. You want a final bite at this one? Really popular comedian.
I mean, I've missed wildly on all of these differing movies, so I can't even imagine.
Dave Chappelle's Block Party. He was the director of that movie.
Oh, I did know that, actually. Yeah, that's right.
Which is a phenomenal documentary.
Yeah, phenomenal documentary.
It's about Dave Chappelle throwing a block party in New York and inviting a bunch of musicians, and it's just him kind of playing host with the most as you meet all the players and people that are going to be...
What a lineup he had. He had Erykah Badu and Lauryn Hill...
The Roots is the house band. Early Kanye, you're like, man, yeah. It's a really good movie. It's a really good documentary too. So, I like his body of work genuinely, Michel Gondry, and I would like. I don't know what else he's been doing, but every time his name pops up somewhere, it's like, I know there's going to be something done with a camera that I haven't seen before.
Sure,
I respect his originality a lot.
So, yeah,
again, that's me. Having my superpower in weird places. Like, why do you know so much about Michel Gondry's catalog? I don't know, man. Just it. So, anyways, we're back to one of the movies that put him on the map, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah, man. A classic cinema. And really, we had that conversation on the last episode about anti-romantic movies, and I think this is pretty high up there in terms of not necessarily that it has a bleak outlook on love and relationships in terms of like they're all doomed, but the ending message of the movie is like, it's going to be difficult. Every relationship is not fairy tales and you know, glass slippers and you find your Prince Charming and ride off into the castle in the sunset. You know, it's relationships are work and relationships are sometimes so trivial about the important stuff and really important about the minutia. Does that make sense?
No, it does. That was really well said, actually. No, it really was. Put that on a shirt.
Anywho. So basically, Joel, played by Jim Carrey.
Who's great in the movie.
Who is phenomenal. I mean, talk about a dude who stretched his acting chops. And I mean, he's silly in this movie, but he's very almost like... stepdad or sad uncle silly, you know, like he's not over the top rubber face, you know, like cartoonish antics.
No, to me, you're right in terms of the comedy, but he's more like scared kid trying to like
make them laugh
so they don't see me here.
That's more to me, that's a good way of putting it.
Which, how did we miss this movie when it came to Oscar snubs? I mean, I know it won for best original screenplay, and I know Kate Winslet was nominated.
Right.
But how did this movie... Yeah, they got snubs all the way around otherwise, man. But anyways, we got to do more diligence on
for sure. Yeah, anyway.
We're just like, you know what movie should have won something? Transformers, the animated movie. Which it should have.
It should have. I cried.
Yeah, anyways.
Anyway, yeah.
No, it is. It really does explore the idea of, you know, like, is it better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all?
Sure.
And like Jim Carrey's character answer to that would be like, no, I want to forget all this ever happened. It hurts too deep.
It's kind of like Inception, you know? In terms of basically there's this technology where they can go in and erase memories, and Joel goes in to erase the memories of his girlfriend, Clementine, played by Kate Winslet. And so the movie takes place on the night where the mind wipers or whatever, the cerebral technicians are coming to his house to erase his memories. And we follow him through their entire relationship as he tries to hold on to her to, like, hide her in different memories, to, like, relive the past and all the different trauma and try and work through it, only for her to be erased in the end anyway. So, spoilers.
Yeah. No,
for a 20-year-old movie.
Yeah, I know, right? I know, right? You know, you can pause at any point.
That's right.
Yeah. No, it's when we talk about original movies, we talked about it before, how nothing to do with this movie, but like a movie like District 9.
Mm-hmm.
When I first saw that movie, I was like, I've never seen an alien refugee movie where I'm sympathetic for the aliens being abandoned on our planet and treated like crap. Like, it was a wholly original concept.
Sure, sure.
This movie,
but the presentation was also so unique.
Yeah, it's a documentary?
Stylistically, I've never seen a movie of this genre done this way.
Yeah, no, and so Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind was very much so that way too. And love or hate it, whatever you think about it, like, it was original shit, you know. And there's something to be said for that. And you know, people always, you know, rip movies that aren't, you know, oh, it's all franchises and sequels. Well, unfortunately, those are what hit at the box office. But then every once in a while, a movie will come along that gets its due diligence in terms of originality,
right? Production value,
relatively financial success, and critical acclaim.
Right.
And we get a movie like Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. We're like, I've never seen anything like this. For me to put it in those kind of categories in terms of that's very high praise. So. I also love District 9 a lot.
Sure.
There's a weird pivot in that movie where I dislike, but...
Once they stop shooting the documentary style and just go into full-on action movie?
A little bit, but the action's also really good, and I'm really into, like, mecha and technology.
Sure.
And I'd also never seen the mecha and technology like that before, too, so it pivoted into something else I like. But we'll talk about District 9 another day. It's mostly when they determine that the... Charlotte Copley's character was the most valuable thing on the planet, and they just need him dead so they can dissect him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's in the building with all the bad guys, and he takes a single doctor with a scalpel and is like, "Let me leave, or I'll kill the doctor." Like, they just established they would have killed anybody in the world to get to you.
Sure,
dude. Like,
sure.
They would have shot the doctor, shot you, and like put him back on the table.
Right. Well, that was fun, fellas.
Yeah, that was the one.
We still on for Parcheesi later? Yeah.
And I understand they had to get him back on the run again, but I was like, you could have just escaped without that.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways. But, sorry, long tangent.
It's all right.
Putting it in those categories of originality.
Yeah, I really love the visual style of this movie. Like, as memories are disappearing, you know, you have buildings fading in and out of existence. You know, he tries to hide Clementine in a memory where he's a little kid hiding under a table.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing was that they used practical effects for that shot. And so, like, they literally had to build a table that basically was longer and taller on one end to give it a false perspective. And then they had to shoot her from a certain angle to make it look like he was this little, you know, I guess 4-year-old kid hiding under the table. And she was this adult woman who kept checking in on him like, "Oh my God, Joel, this is amazing. I can't believe you're hiding me here." And like, she's wearing the, you know, 1960s or 70s, like floral paisley pattern dress. And she's got the original Susan Storm, you know, haircut and stuff like that.
Like I said, The visual effects that he knows, like I said, you'll watch it if you ever do watch the movie, Be Kind, Rewind, you'll see some of the visual tricks that he pulls in that movie too. And it's that's why I was saying you can see some similarities. He knows his way around a shot for sure in terms of like understanding what you're looking at and how to do things. It's unlike a lot of other people. So
It's I really liked the scene where he's basically arguing with Clementine and you know, he's rehashing all the shit, like, oh, well, you cheated on me, you drank, you this, that, the other. And she's like, well, fine, just fuck it, you know, like, just forget about me then. And he starts to forget, and then you can see buildings in the background start to...
to crumble.
To, like, blink out. I mean, they literally just go dark. But that was, again, all shot on a soundstage with forced perspective. You know, they literally just had buildings illuminated by stage lights, and then they would just turn them off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that scene. I was thinking about something. Maybe I'm thinking of Inception when I watched the things crumble into the sea. Yeah, yeah. My fault.
Similar movie.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Same concept. We're going in to change memories to affect who you are as a person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But yeah. With a very romantic slant to it.
Yeah. With the dangers of love in there. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good pull, though. Good. I'm glad. I need to watch that movie again, because, like I said, I knew that... there was a lot of hype, and I was a bit of a contrarian when people would be on something, and it became like a lot of people's, like, mm-hmm. once it hit DVD, like, or the cult following it got, it was like, oh, Eternal Sunshine, it's how I feel about this growing, you know, you're in high school, it's not like any of your fucking relationships last, or, you know, you're in your early 20s, it's like,
right.
all these people seem to relate to this movie.
And I just discovered this new artist, he's called Jim Morrison, he's like,
right.
really deep, man.
Like, it was,
no, he was fucked up on PCP.
Right, it was kind of one of those things, just like with the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas in high school, a lot of people just started to discover that film. Mm-hmm. And it was just, everyone was talking about it, much like Fight Club before that. I kind of, I liked that movie.
Tyler Durden, man, that's me. Yeah. I am him. Like, oh, so you're imaginary. Spoilers.
Yeah, so Eternal Sunshine was one of the movies that I saw and I really liked it, but I kind of backed off just because it was a bit of an oversaturation, which is by no means the fault of the artist.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And the performance, so I need to revisit it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Any other reviews for it? Any other takes you want to talk about? It is tough, though, in the sense of the overall, like, the themes of it. Just like, man, this hurts so much, and I would rather it have never existed whatsoever than to sit there and live another day with remembering the mm-hmm. good, the bad, because the good hurts as much as the bad, and right. I'm angry, and I'm right. sad, and it's this mixed pot of emotion, and it's just like, you know, if you had the option, would you press that button? You know? And
I mean,
there's days I would have been like, absolutely yes. Absolutely, you know, in my own personal life, there's some events like, boy, if I could press that button and forget that.
Oh, for sure.
That'd be great, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But I mean, again, you know, does that change anything really? Like, you know, spoiler alert, in the end of the movie, they meet again and they find out that they both had their memories erased, and they sort of decide, like, okay, we're maybe going to make another go for it, knowing what we know now.
Yeah.
So it kind of ends on a little bit of an uptick in terms of they both see each other for the broken individuals that they are, and they decide, you know, maybe it's still worth it.
And they say, let's cram those two broken puzzle pieces together.
That's right. just put your square peg in my round hole,
yep,
and let's
there you go.
Well, let's make it work.
Pretend this is okay.
Everything's fine.
Yeah, this is fine here. that's tough, man. It is also when you if you were to, and they explore this a little bit in the film, but like if you were to delete those things, no matter if a journey is good or bad or anything, as human beings, we grow from it, we change from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so with all that, have you changed for the better, given all the terrible ride that you may have been on, this roller coaster that jerks you around everywhere? What would you be losing in you today by removing those things, by removing that journey, by removing those memories of
right.
you're removing valuable lessons as somebody who is in some ways wiser than my years. I can tell you the aspects of my life that are, it's because I've learned lessons the hard way.
Yeah.
You know
I
mean? Or I've come about them honestly.
What do they say? Experience is the best teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. And they go, what do you consider experience? Well, should I consider experience?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what Loki says.
I lived through the thing. So,
Yeah. So
I hope I learned something. I already fucking paid the price.
Yeah. So there's certain things, and would you lose the things that you came about honestly? And that's the interesting part of that movie that kind of, again, thematically, something it isn't explored that much. So originality in a lot of ways, the way it shot thematically, plot line. So good movie.
Yeah. Agreed. So. I'm going to give it, one Stellan Skarsgård as a romantic interest.
Oh, he was, wasn't he?
Uh-huh.
That's the dad, right?
That's
Stellan Skarsgård?
No, yeah. Well, the Skarsgård boy's dad, yeah.
Yeah,
in the movie, he's the inventor or proprietor of the technology, and Kirsten Dunst falls in love with him.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. That's right.
They had that whole monologue that gives the title of the movie.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I forgot about that. I can't top that review, but it's pretty good. It's pretty damn good. I will give it, actually, I will. I will give it those the bald spots that you're going to have on your head from putting the little implants on there.
Uh-huh.
You're probably going to have to shave down somewhere. I can't get an EKG without getting the razor out anymore. Welcome to old age, my friends. Oh, man. Well, good. Yeah, good discussion. Good discussion.
Yeah, man.
So, what else you got for me?
I think that kind of covers it for me, man. That's kind of it. Yeah, man. So, million-dollar question back at you. What you been watching, brother?
Yes. I do like this part of the show.
Because it's all about me.
Right? I have the mic and you will listen to everything I have to say. To be honest, though, not a tremendous amount. So I'm glad you had quite the laundry list of movies that we could talk about with enough of them that I've seen.
Well, one of us has to fill time.
Yeah. No, but I'm always watching something, though. I won't bore you. I'm always watching something animated, like I said, whether it be BoJack Horseman or South Park or whatever. And I am working on a... my favorite season of South Park. I think I'm going to start to rank them. I know rankings and lists are popular amongst the youth right now.
Top 5.
Yeah, probably will. But I am revisiting a phenomenal show, which I know you haven't seen, so I won't spend too much time on it. But I'm revisiting Ted Lasso.
Nice. Okay.
Michael, I get it. Like, it's one of those things where it's commercial, but we also love Jason Sudeikis.
Of course.
On this neck of the woods over here at WBW. I don't see how someone can watch this show and like, it didn't deliver. Or I mean, I guess there's different flavors for different people, but it's one of those things with even all the hype with all the Emmys, and we didn't even start it till the third season was over, which was only 3 seasons. You're in and out. You know?
Right,
and
sure.
There's, I think, maybe 10 apiece. I think there's 9 in one of them.
Sure. Because it's basically like British style where they just do like... 9 or 10 extended episodes, basically.
Yeah, they're each about 40 minutes, some of them a little bit longer, about 37 to 45 minutes, something like that. But it's so good. It messes you up, and we're going to talk about another movie that'll mess you up emotionally if you're not paying, like, if you're not prayed up, as they say. You know what I mean? If you're not going there with all your faculties, you get caught with your guard down and be like, did Ted Lasso just make me bust out laughing 10 minutes ago, and now I'm about to cry for whatever reason? And it's weird, they have all these characters, and they all have their shtick or whatever, or their thing to them, but they somehow, like, thread this needle of this being, like, a sitcom, but also, like, hitting really heartfelt questions about life, and everyone is written to be overall so likable, and that every single person wins you over, and it really rests on the shoulders of Jason Sudeikis as Ted Lasso. Like, if you met this guy, most people, you know, his American charm or whatever, he's a Kansas man. And so he goes over to London to coach a football club. And like his sense of humor does not land anywhere, but he just stays at it. He's so true to who he is.
Sure.
And so true to like, no, I'm really just interested in making other people the best versions of themselves. And it's such a bullshit thing to say as a coach. You're like, hey, man, we want to win here. This means a lot to us. And one of his assistant coaches does kind of lose his mind on him one time. Like, it's important to me winning. You know, this is what we do. This is what pays our bills. This is what these men, the people of this town, care about. So, like, yay, Ted, on you. But he always has
all your altruism is leaving us poor, basically.
Yeah. Or, like, you're disappointing some people through it. And the whole premise of the show is that the Hannah Waddington's character, who inherited the Richmond, is the football club. She inherited Richmond via a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband was openly cheating on... Everyone knew he was cheating on her, except her. She was the last one to find out, and it was all in the papers. And the one thing he loved more than anything was the football club. And so her goal was to destroy it in front of him slowly. And so she brings over an American football coach who knows nothing about soccer and Ted Lasso. And
That's the exact plot of Major League, by the way.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, well, I had no idea, though. I didn't remember that. But yeah, it's just, I won't spend too much time. We've talked about it before, but it's just the show wins you over, man.
Yeah.
And you know, it pulls these tricks of being, like I said, it'll hit really heavy in some ways. And just the likability of these characters shine through when they finally learn their lesson. You're like, ah, shit, everyone comes about these lessons.
Sure.
And it doesn't feel manufactured. There's a little bit of a heel turn that's a little bit shoot in. Shoehorned in, whatever.
They slipped that shit in there.
They slip it in there, and it did not fit initially. Yeah, there's a little heel turn in there for one of the characters, but it doesn't overall distract from the quality of, mm-hmm. of like by season three, you're like, damn, that's it. It's over. And you want more. So wins, man.
Now here's my question is there's certain shows that although they're really likable, they kind of suffer from, they want everybody to be a sympathetic character. You know what I mean? Like there's no real villain to root against. It's just sort of like, I want everybody to win. You know what I mean? Like it suffers under hero syndrome, I guess.
That's great in the sense of, yes, it does, but it doesn't suffer. Somehow this show pulls the trick in which they give everyone enough, the main characters at least. There's a couple people that they kind of just have their, oh, that's the one says football is life. You know, that's his thing. So everybody, but for the most part, everyone gets, you get to understand their motivation and what makes them tick. Why would this man be so positive despite, you know, Ted Lasso?
Mm-hmm.
They reveal it pretty early, but part of the reason why he moved from Kansas to London, he's going through a wicked divorce.
Gotcha.
And he's trying to be still cool with his ex-wife and like, maybe we'll get back together, maybe not. And like, but guess what? He signs the divorce paper. So it's really, they more do a good job of basing how these people got to be where they are. Much like we were talking about with the ladies, man, of like, why would this guy that comes on at 2:30 in the morning, what's the portrait of this man? What, like, why would he do such a thing?
What's his
backstory?
Would
do this?
Right. You know? Who would do this?
And they do a good job of all of that. And everyone gets a little bit of a moment to be very real. And they do kind of wipe away some of, there is, that's why I said one of the heel turns is necessary for one of the characters. But his motivations are a little bit lacking. But it's also, I mean, like Rick James says, most people don't just do things just to do them. You know, they got a little more sense than that. But yeah, I remember grinding my feet in Eddie's couch. But no, most people don't do things just to do them. Most people,
sure.
There's something inside that triggers it, you know, and there's a big reveal as to Ted Lasso, why he ticks the way he ticks. And it's beyond just the divorce. It's trauma that happened in his life. One of the main characters, his dad is an absolute prick to him. And, you know, and he's the star soccer, you know, I'm going to say soccer because that's my lingo, but he's the star soccer player with this golden foot, and he's a prick to everybody, and he's handsome and has money, and he's rich, and he's just kind of unlikable. But surely enough, he learns via Ted Lasso to be like, wow, like maybe I can be a team player. And it's something that it's a lesson he takes without. And once they take these lessons, they earn them, and then you start to like root for this person. And there's all these little moving pieces that they somehow stick the landing while without having a true villain. I guess it's just circumstances, just people being different people. And Ted Lasso does an amazing job as a character and as a show to sit there and bridge the gap and go, man, if we just take a little bit of time understanding what it is about this other person, like it's a better place. And as corny as that sounds, it's incredibly true. And so, know, being empathetic and being like, hey, let me hear your side of the... You know, one of my, hopefully you'll see the show. I don't think I'm going to ruin anything. There's a scene where he white knights for the owner of the club, Hannah Waddington's character.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And he plays darts against her ex-husband who screwed her over. And he's saying, oh, I bought a stake in the club via my new 20-year-old fiance who we're going to have a baby with. And we're going to be sitting in the owner's box, which I can't own a piece of the team via our divorce, but it's in her name, so I'll be there. And he's just being a prick.
Right.
Really
right.
Just to continue to jab. And Ted
Dig
Lasso.
The knife in a little bit deeper. Yeah.
Ted Lasso begins to white knight for him. And he challenges to a game of darts. And the other guy, his name's Rupert, is sitting there talking shit the whole time. And the lesson he teaches him is like, I've been listening to you talk this whole time about everything you've accomplished. And he said, if you would have just taken 10 minutes to ask me anything about me or anything about darts and what I know about it, you would know. And he throws a bullseye. That my dad, when at the age of eight, took me every single Friday to go play darts at the local bar. And he throws another triple 20 or whatever.
Right.
And he's like, and that's something we continued to do. And he's like, also, you learn that I've been using my left hand this whole time. And he just skunks him. And it's kind of played out in the way they're like, oh.
You pulled the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah, exactly. But it's the way he white knights him for him and the lesson overall. And it's something they carry thematically throughout the show of just taking the time to understand somebody to what makes them tick. Whether you agree with them or not will give you a better insight to that person and how to navigate that relationship.
That's interesting. That's a really good like perspective on things. It's interesting that they would take the route of that as a serious theme. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like yes, there's conflict, but ultimately it's all solved by just talking. Yeah.
Being empathetic, being sympathetic, trying to understand rather than to be understood.
On that note, go watch a movie and talk about what somebody you love. That's it for us here. What have you been watching?
But no, it's a really good show. It's a really good show. And like I said, I was like, it's not going to live up to the hype. And it still does, even through the second watch. So
I got to give it a look. I do.
I fully recommend it.
The problem is that I know me. Like, if I start this, I'm going to binge it. And I haven't had time or effort to start a new series that I need to be dedicated to.
The good news is it's not like One Piece Mansion where there's 6,000 episodes or Dragon Ball Z. It's three seasons. So if you did, the binge would be over before you know it. I mean, it's a less than 30-hour commitment.
Which
isn't bad. It's not bad. It's still a lot of time.
That's almost one episode an hour.
All right. So, anyways. So, yeah, Ted Lasso, I know I've reviewed it before, but we're revisiting it, and I feel like that's kind of Angie and I's show. I'm sure there's a lot of couples out there that are like, oh, that's our show, but yeah, it's a good one.
We just started Bridgerton.
Oh, yeah? Just like a global phenomenon, man.
I mean, do you like very sexy people talking very fancy?
Yeah, there's a lot of good-looking people in that show.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Oh, the main... Are you in season two yet?
No, season one still.
Okay, well, there's a funny interview that... And she did it very tongue-in-cheek. You know, she's... And I do not mean this as an insult, so just bear with me.
Who is this?
It's the red-haired woman in season two. She's a little bit... I don't even want to say heavy-set, but she's a little bit bigger.
Zaftig.
Is that...
Buxom, I would
say. Sure. And I'm
very
not,
curvaceous.
Yes. The va-va-voom, as it were.
Sure.
And I'm not trying to... She's a very good-looking person, so I'm not taking anything away.
She got a real nice personality.
Chill out. But somebody asked her...
She is very attractive. Like, yeah. She is a very curvy, like, I would say a little heavy-set woman. But
yeah,
like,
but it's whatever. But either way, point of the story is some reporter or somebody in an interview asked her something along the lines of, like, what's it like for, you know, girls like you to get this opportunity to be in, like, the number one hit show? And she's like, what do you mean, girls with awesome boobs? With, like, perfect boobs or whatever she said. It was just so, like, whatever do you mean? Please expand. Like, it was a funny little wink to the camera. So that's right. She kind of made me
Are you telling me you don't want to see these?
Yeah. It was a kind of a wink to the camera and, like, I kind of am rooting for this.
Yeah. I dig it. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about Bridgerton, though?
I mean, like I said,
honest opinion. I mean, is it captivating? And
it's captivating. It's a little bit cheesy. It's
a little soap opera-ish.
A little bit soap opera.
Yeah.
But you know, at least it's very well written, and it's I don't want to say it's clever, but it gives me just what I need from each character to keep me invested, and like I kind of want to see where this goes. Yeah. So
Ted Lasso's a bit cheesy too, but you're like, damn it! But I still am invested.
Yeah.
Like,
anyways. But yeah, once I finish the Bridgerton series, I will sit down and give an in-depth review.
Yeah, it's a global phenomenon that might pass me by. So
I'm going to give it one Victorian Wang.
The one dude, the main guy of season one, what's his name?
I don't remember. He played in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, he's a lot of ladies are swooning over him.
He's a handsome man.
He's a handsome man indeed. On that note, I also have been watching, I just don't know why I don't watch this cartoon more often. I think it was because of all the hype of the new cartoon that came out on Prime Video. I think it's called The Caped Crusader.
Oh, no, okay.
And
yeah.
I think you know where I'm going with this. It's on HBO Max. But sort of revisiting season one of Batman the Animated Series.
Bro, I could talk about that show. I mean, that we could dedicate an entire month of programming to that show. How good it is. I mean, Bruce Timm.
Yeah, Bruce Timm. Yeah, that'd be a different show.
It's a completely...
Bruce Timm.
Helmed, yeah. I mean, Kevin Conroy is Batman, the voice of Batman, Bruce Wayne. I mean, that literally is, whenever I read a Batman comic, I hear his voice. So, RIP to him.
Yeah, no. The show is incredible, though. And it still is the definitive Batman series for me. Mm-hmm. It's hard not to. The whole retro-futuristic, they'll use helicopters occasionally, but they're also big in, like, blimps. And it's like this weird 1940s that's also kind of crossed over with the 1990s, like, gothic.
Yeah, it's kind of art deco meets steampunk meets... I mean, they have computers and stuff, but it's like that every design looks like something out of a, like the movie Metropolis or something
like
that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That was a good pull. Good pull. So, I don't know. I don't really know what I can say about this show in the sense of it was the definitive voice of Batman for me.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean, it came out in 91 or 92 on the heels.
I'd say 91, yeah.
I think 91. But it was hot off the heels of the Tim Burton Batman movies, and like it carried the torch phenomenally, and it really made DC animation, not like or Warner Brothers animation, they were in on that one. But, like it kind of set the table for them again in terms of like, they're into the DC universe was that series. And from there it spun off their Superman things. And you can say what you want about the Marvel versus DC battle. Marvel animation has lacked largely. They had a couple hits in terms of like X-Men was one thing. Spider-Man was pretty good. They had a couple hits or miss. They had a couple newer ones that I wasn't as privy to. Some of the X-Men evolutions and stuff.
That one was really hit or miss. I watched it and the episodes are either really, really good or just mindless drivel,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like there's nothing to it. It's fluff.
Same thing with the Avengers one, but largely some of the what I was saying is the race towards whether you pick Marvel or DC. DC's animation in terms of that has always been a bit superior,
for sure.
In terms of they make really adult themed movies, and some of the their feature length ones are actually really good adaptations,
for sure.
Of the
animated Suicide Squad is phenomenal and violent and gory, and I mean very adult themed, but also has a lot of heart in terms of, we were talking about sympathetic characters, like you actually start to root for all of the characters one by one, and then they get dispatched in various methods.
So it's just a testament to that, and it, all those movies they still probably would exist in some form, but you know, this launched some people. This is why it's weird, you know, Batman the Animated Series launched the Superman cartoon that was back on Kids WB back in the day. And then it did a really, their Justice League was really good. And some people have the definitive Green Lantern as Jon Stewart. That's why it was so weird when they did the movie. Like, you have a whole fan base of kids that sees Jon Stewart as the Green Lantern.
Right.
And like, why do I care about, as this is Mark Bernardin, the writer, co-host of Fat Man Beyond, was talking about when the Green Lantern movie came out, all these people know Jon Stewart as the different Green Lantern. I'm like, why do I care about this white Green Lantern who's not good at being a Green Lantern, and there's other Green Lanterns that are better than him that currently exist? Like, why do I care? And that's a good question. So, but I say all that to say that those cartoons stem from Batman, the Animated Series, and how pivotal and seminal it was, dare I say. And, it continued that legacy into Warner Brothers and DC Animation, into the Justice League, which a lot of people really view. I missed that train a little bit. I was starting to grow out. Not that I ever grew out of cartoons, but I just never caught that wave. But some people look at that as their definitive Justice League. So
I agree with you in terms of, I don't think that the credibility and the impact of that series can be understated. It was such...
Talking about Batman?
Yeah, Batman, the animated series. It took such bold steps in presenting very, very adult themes in not like a childlike manner, but in a way that was easy to process for younger generations.
Palatable.
It was palatable.
Yeah.
You know, the whole concept of Batman's struggle with inadequacy and imposter syndrome. I mean, that was a recurring theme that popped up all the time in that show, was, am I doing the right thing by being Batman? Like, am I inherently disgracing my father's legacy by dressing as a bat and letting criminals, you know, continually roam the streets despite my best efforts, you know?
Right.
And then there was also really, you know, solid action. You know, there was an episode called, Tiger.
Where
Selina Kyle, Catwoman, gets turned into a cat creature via like Island of Dr. Moreau kind of thing. And Batman has this whole morality tale of like, what is human and should I even allow these creatures to exist? And are they just pitiful creatures? And, you know, there's this cat creature named Tigress that speaks very eloquently and quotes Thoreau and stuff like that. Like it's such a was it Thoreau? It was Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright. I can't remember the author. Damn it.
It was Robert Frost, probably.
It was not Robert Frost. Anyway, Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, In the Forest of the Night. Have I ever seen such divine in your eye? Whatever.
Whatever. Point being, yeah.
But yeah, he quotes that poem. And it's just, it's so well-researched and so well-written. I mean, and then, of course, you bring in Mark Hamill as the Joker. And they all, whatever villain they had for that episode was always some famous actor. Like they had Roddy McDowall from Planet of the Apes fame playing the Mad Hatter. They had Ron Perlman as Clayface. They had Arlene Sorkin as...
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. Arlene Sorkin as...
the original Harley Quinn.
God, who else do they have? I mean, so many.
Ed Asner was one of, I think, either Falcone or one of the crime bosses.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
That's why the connection here, me being weird again... Andrea Romano is the voice director of that of Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah.
She went on to go do the Boondocks.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. And so, so that was the connection there with Ed Asner.
And so, yeah, she brought over Ed Asner to play Ed Wensler.
Yep, there you go.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, random trivia for Marcus. So, like I said, it's a phenomenal show. It still really holds up because it's set its own. It's almost like a divergent timeline. So the technology, some of them don't even still exist. So there's some that we've certainly surpassed in the terms of like this retro futuristic stuff. Some of it's like, oh, it never came to be. We never really used blimps like that.
Yeah.
And so it still kind of holds up in a weird way.
It's this weird anachronistic timeline where like we have like Dick Tracy radio watches, but we also have laser guns.
Yep. And trolleys are a big thing and, you know, Zeppelin blimps and... Right. Yeah, everything's analog, not digital. You know, it's kind of weird, man.
Yeah, so. But I mean, production-wise, it does so much for that show because it doesn't set it in a definitive timeline. So it's not bound by like, oh, well, this is very clearly the 1960s, or this is very clearly, you know, the 90s. Like, it expands and uses the technology currently available, but in a new and unique way that sort of gives it a retro feel. So it sort of makes the entire show timeless.
Well said. That's what I was... Did you just say what I was trying to say was smarter? But yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's almost like a divergent timeline where it's like the technology, some of them are well surpassed, some of them don't, but it cooks, man. I'm on season one now, and I just forgot... What good, it gave me such a good insight. So when I read characters in the comic books, like my original forming of how this character is, how they operate, what they're based upon, what makes them tick, so much of it is based on that show, which is not a bad thing because the show does the source material so much justice.
And I just like I said, it sort of simplifies the history to make it palatable for a younger generation, but...
But like Harvey Dent, I just watched the two-part Two-Face episode. Mm-hmm. And like it's really good. They take a couple liberties, but you don't miss the essence of the character by what liberties they take.
Right.
They get the essence of these characters and really what drives them. They knock that out the park. So it's good to see.
Favorite episode of that show. Sure, go ahead.
Heart of Ice.
Yes, sir. Where they have Victor Freeze and just the way he speaks his lines. It's a very difficult thing for an actor to try to remove all emotionality and try and remove all like passion or impetus or motivation and, mm-hmm. and just say a line as flat as possible. And just the way they turn him almost into a robot.
It's like less.
Like vocal. Yes. Right.
Less.
Right.
Less.
Especially for a vocal actor where all you have is your range and you got to go up high sometimes and then bring it down low. Yeah. And the way he just says his lines completely monotone, completely emotionless.
Stoic. Yeah.
Yeah. Stone cold, you know, like it would drive me to tears if I had tears to shed.
Yeah. And it's like, even then, that was too much. It's like, less.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, it's a phenomenal performance. And written by the great, was it Paul Dini?
Paul Dini. That's
right.
Creator of Harley Quinn.
Yeah. And shout out to him. He worked on, he won an Emmy for Tiny Toon Adventures, which is another great show.
Did he really?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, or the show got the Emmy. I know it was one of the ones that he wrote. So
right. I mean, that was his segue into
more Warner Brothers stuff. Right. So
Warner Brothers were like, we like this dude. How do you feel about Batman? He's like, I have ideas.
I have ideas. Yeah, sometimes the right project comes with the right people on board.
For sure. That was the perfect conglomeration of, like, we've got the right art director, we've got the right
vision.
Writer.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody bought it.
We're willing to put money behind it and back it up for, you know, a year. And then they went, oh, yeah, we can do 4 more of these immediately.
Yep. So, Batman the Animated Series. Oh, also, the score. I will still ride around on a bicycle and go... Yeah, I will give it one whimsical Danny Elfman score. All right, on that note, we are going to take a break from our sponsor, Triple Mint Gum. And that double mint just ain't quite enough.
We'll be right back. Sponsor, Triple Mint Gum. When you got that halitosis severus, nothing else will do.
I didn't mean to step on your joke, but it was funny. Halitosis severus. I like it. Well, we both watched a little something. I watched a little movie called The Lego Movie.
I did too. And then I watched it again because the kids love it.
Uh-huh.
And then I watched it again because the kids love it. And then we watched it, you guessed
again,
it, again.
Because everything is awesome. So, everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Literally for the past, I don't know, 4 days, we've watched that at least once a day. So I am well versed in this Lego movie you speak of.
Well, it was only my second time watching it in its entirety. I watched it once when it first came, not in theaters, but once when it first came out to whatever streaming platform.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I remember it had a lot of traction. Everyone was like, oh, Lego movie, surprisingly good. I'm like, I remember seeing the trailers being like, really? Like, we're doing a Lego movie? I guess. It's a cash grab, sure.
Sure.
And then I didn't know these two young up-and-comers named Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Man, they did the 21 Jump Street movie, was a hit. And I was like, all right, cool. These guys got some juice. And then they hit the Lego movie. Maybe it's because my expectations were non-existent for the film. But that movie was really good.
It was really good. Super well constructed. And for those of you
that know... Nice play on words there.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you haven't seen this movie, it is so visually dynamic. And, yes, almost the entire movie is done in Legos.
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful CGI animation that's all Lego-based. I think...
There's a couple shots of, like, when the Morgan Freeman ghost comes back. It's actual Legos, and they're just hanging him from a string with a light up.
Yeah.
And he's like, ooh, I'm ghost.
Well, and then there's the quote-unquote the real-world stuff where it's, you know, the little kid playing with his dad's Legos and, you know, Will Ferrell playing the dad. But even then, that ties into what's happening in the pretend world of the Lego world.
Yeah, no, it's... They tie it together so well in terms of what you saw thematically, in terms of somebody wanting to, and like the how somebody wants to make things permanent, and there'll be, you know, everything's uniform and it has to be this way, and then those who dare to dream and imagine are the outcasts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And to tie all that into a son going downstairs to play with his dad's Legos when his dad is trying to build this, like, perfect city and, right. You know, everything must be in its perfect place, right. And I'm going to glue it down and all this other stuff, and he's not supposed to be playing with it. When you go back and watch the movie, again, this was only my second time seeing it in its entirety, but still knowing what I knew about it, going in and watching it with that perspective, it still really works, like, thematically all throughout.
Oh, yeah.
It really, really, where they really were, like, they had that idea of the kid playing with his dad's Legos.
Sure.
at the forefront of every scene that they were doing. They were like, how does it tie into this movie? Obviously, we're in imagination land, so there can be, like, the toys don't move on themselves. That's not what we're saying. But there's a whole story that the child constructed. And, you know, much like we used to sit around and play with our toys in a wrestling league, or, you know, I had themes going between Sub-Zero and Scorpion were friends with my little Mortal Kombat G.I. Joes.
Sure.
I had whole story arcs that were going on.
Oh, yeah. I would have Predator wrestling against RoboCop in my wrestling league or something like that. And that's sort of the pride and prominence of this movie is the creativity in terms of you can build whatever you want. And not just in terms of Legos, but in terms of shaping your world. Like, be a dreamer. Be someone who's going to look at the world around them and find a new way to construct things and different perspectives, even if they're silly ideas, you know. Like, there's the protagonist, you know, Emmett, you know, played by Chris Pratt, has this idea where he builds a double-decker couch.
Right.
And everybody just kind of shits on it, you know. They're like, well, if you're on the top in the middle, then you got to crawl over people.
Yeah.
And if you're on the bottom, then you just have legs dangling in front of you the entire show. Like, that doesn't make sense. But even that sort of pays off in the end in terms of it's such a silly idea that it ends up saving their lives.
Right.
You know, so basically the premise is there's Lord Business who wants to make everything uniform and complete and everything in its place in terms of, you know, medieval Legos have their world and mm-hmm. Batman Legos have his world and city Legos have their world and everything must be separate. And enters in these, they call them builders.
Master builders.
And it's, they basically can break apart the world around them to build anything they want. And the way that they do it is kind of visually interesting. Like, they'll see Lego parts, but they'll see, like, the serial numbers or, you know, the, like, six wheel, you know, hexagonal part number 135, number 758258, and then they'll combine
64
it.
Spoke gear right here.
Right.
Yeah,
whatever right, it is. Right, yeah. Right. Right. Like, it almost like a neural network or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. A little bit matrixy in the terms of they see the code of it all.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
they can see, they can move in hyperspeed to build things that,
right,
you know,
right. And so enter in Emmett, who is played by Chris Pratt, who is the bumbling protagonist who discovers this unseen world of multiverses and
the most unspecial.
Evil
overlords.
Yeah, he's literally his claim to fame is that he's the most basic Lego figure possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His face is so unrecognizable that, or is so common that facial scanners can't pick it up or mm-hmm. whatever from the bad guy or whatever. Now, it's really, I mean, just like I said, there's a lot of good, like, morals in terms of watching this as a kid. And even as an adult, it's a connection between a father and a son of being like, you've lost the whole point of, you know, there's the joke later. It turns out, as the movie goes on, these master builders are trying to stop the Kraggle, mm-hmm. which is funny because it's just crazy glue, but it got folded up from the tube, so it just became the Kraggle.
Right, exactly.
And so the Kraggle's going to glue everyone in place, and, you know, the Master Builders are going to stop it. And then it turns out later, you know, it zooms out that it's just this young boy playing with his dad's Legos in a basement that he's not supposed to. And, you know, the whole moral of the story of being like, you built these things and you've inspired me to do so much more with them, you mm-hmm. know? And his dad was even impressed once he stopped, you know, You built all this stuff? Like, what is this exactly? Is this a robot pirate made out of sharks and wooden planks? He's like, yeah, Dad, it's you know, that's Metalbeard. And the dad's impressed, like, hey, you're in the sense you're a master builder too. And what you would want between a father and a son is I've given you these tools for you to make the world your own, you know, to leave your mark on this world. And it's a really delicate and awesome story. And it's also this parallel of like, I'm only playing with these things because I want to connect to you. You know, business is the, you know, the routine, the mundane, the I have to go to work and everything must be how it is and the strict schedule and these are my things. And you kind of like, that's the bad guy that kills the kid in all of us, you know, is this mundane thing of just like we get so wrapped up in this routine and like we lose so much of that. That's why Michael and I still will geek out over like MODOK was in the movie. Like, oh, the CGI sucked. It's like, dude, We got MODOK in a fucking live action screen. Are you kidding me? You know, and so it's something that's near and dear to my heart in terms of just never lose that aspect of you. Never lose that kid in you. Because, I mean, once it world's trying to take it from you at all times, and it's the whole, the son is just wanting to connect to his dad through something that he finds an interest in. And he's like, you play with these Legos, why don't you just play with me?
Right.
Well, no. These are, there's a funny line about, he's like, Dad, the box says that they're from ages 8 to 14. He's like, well, that's just a suggestion. When I buy them and I do what I'm doing, they become an adult thing.
Right.
It's like, nah, man, you're playing with Legos, dude. Right. Don't get it twisted.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Have fun with it, man.
Did you just say what I was thinking, but smarter?
Potentially.
I 100%, I could not tag that up better than you've already put it. I think you're absolutely right. It's ultimately a tale about connecting with the child within you and sort of tapping into that creativity and never losing that. That sort of looking, always finding a way to look at the world in a new perspective and not being brought down by the rigidity of it all.
Mm. Well said. Well said. And he plus one me. And he goes to the line afterwards. Nice work. There is, just in terms of the visual storytelling, this movie has so many jokes just going on in the background.
They're
all the time.
A mile a minute.
One of my favorite jokes in the movie is they're escaping from Cowboy World or the Wild West World.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going over a train track, and they're in pursuit. Behind them is the bad cop, played by the incomparable Liam Neeson's.
You're talking about Tookins's?
Straight Tookin. And they're going over this, they're on a train, and it's going over one of those wooden bridges over a body of water.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, they zoom down, and there's alligators in the water, but the alligators have red and blue sirens on their heads, so they're police alligators. It made me laugh. Just be like, of course he dispatched police gators red and blue sirens on their head. It's completely silly and nonsense, but why not, man?
Oh, yeah.
It's a click of two bricks and now it's a whole different creature.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly
the joy of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's so many beautiful visual gags in this movie that, I mean, you could watch this movie three times and you're still going to find something new in the background or some sort of new gag that you'd never noticed before. You know, I just, lots of Lego references. I mean, they literally go to a collection of builders, and it's everybody from Abe Lincoln in Lego form to the Ninja Turtles
to Michelangelo. Michelangelo.
Yeah, he's got Michelangelo the Builder, Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle.
That's funny. Yeah. It's
Wonder Woman, Superman.
Yeah, the Green Lantern crush on Superman the whole time.
They bring in 80s space
Charlie
Legos.
Day.
Yeah, Charlie Day.
He's like, retroactive 80s stuff, my specialty. Who always wants to build a spaceship.
Spaceship.
Yeah, there's a really good cast in the Wall of Famer herself, Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, Wild
plays
Style.
Lucy, yeah, Wild Style, aka right. Lucy, yeah.
Weren't you my former student who kept changing your name every 6 weeks? First it was Wild Style, then it was Lover Girl, then it was
Darkness,
then it was, right. Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah. Yeah, and like every character is a bit broken in this as well, you know, and they kind of bring them all together.
Yeah. Just the sheer amount of cameos is, I mean, you get Morgan Freeman in there, you get, you know,
John Hamm, Jonah Hill, Liam Neeson, like I said, Elizabeth Banks, there's a ton of them.
Will Arnett.
Will Arnett, for sure. Who's awesome and everything.
Who else?
Every name, you know, every character you see that speaks is somewhat a heavy hitter. I will say, one thing I appreciate about what Phil Lord and Chris Miller do, and we talked about it when we were talking about, they also do the Into the Spider-Verse films. They're the executive producers on those. And they do something where they utilize mediums to their full potential. What do I mean by that? By, like, in comic books, there's certain things that you can do that you can't do on a movie screen. Or it just loses some of the impact when you have to flip the page. You know what I mean? And then you flip the page and it's an actual cliffhanger of a double splash page of, you know, or every, or it's this climax of the thing and you fold.
It's utilizing space in the most dramatic way in terms of, like, every panel should lead into a more exciting panel kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying about the medium. And that's something that only can exist in comic books. When you utilize it to its maximum potential, you're like, oh, this is why this is still around.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give them a big shout out. What they do with animation is groundbreaking in so many ways. And you can see it in the Lego movie, how they This movie, if they tried to do a live action or stop motion, it would work. It would be a vastly different movie. If they animated it just to be like, it's going to be smooth movements from these toys, it would lose something.
Sure.
If they were all like, anthropomorphic isn't the word, but more humanized.
Sure,
they
had smooth, I know what you mean, yeah.
Then it would lose something. There's this fine blend of actually using real Legos in some shots, and even like the way that like spaceships take off. They don't have like this spaceship sound effect. It's just some dude in the mic going do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Right, yeah.
And so they utilize every tool at their disposal to really lean into this animation to
like,
make it soar.
Like when the characters run or jump or walk, it looks like a kid playing with Legos and like bending the legs and twisting the arms in a certain fashion to make it look like, and I jump over this cliff, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and they utilize it perfectly.
Like it's kind of herky-jerky. It's a little bit, yeah.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, using like the whole head of the Lego to spin around to get the whole 360 view of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and they do some really good camera work. Like it's a well-directed movie. There's a lot of really big action sequences where, unlike Transformers, where things are changing on the fly because the master builders get their ship blown up and then they're building something in the air that they can land on. And for the most part, you follow, I mean, you don't follow every piece that's being
sure,
built, but you get that like...
It's not a clusterfuck. It's not cluttered visually.
And I got to give them props on that because they continued what they learned in this movie and they did it, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. They took that into the Spider-Verse series where, for example, Spider-Punk will move 60 frames per second is about as smooth as...
Oh, you're talking about the second one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or the first one, either one.
Sure.
They do the same trick in the first one, but they just use it for different characters. So like 60 frames per second is like if you move your hand, your eye will perceive that at 60 frames per second. That's
sure.
The rate we take things in. 30 frames per second... is pretty much there's no gap in it, but you can still see a little bit of slowdown. But
it's like looking through a strobe light or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's pretty darn smooth. They'll do little tricks, for example, as you know, Spider-Punk. They'll let him go at a off because you know he's punk rock. They'll let his frames per second in which he move be like a weird number. It'd be like he's going to move at 17 frames per second and then he'll jump to 24 frames for just a little bit when he's speaking coherently and then go back to when he's being rebellious.
Right,
he'll move
right.
at 17 frames a second. For example, when
It's like wildly changing tempo in the middle of a song or something like that. Or like System of a Down or something like that.
Absolutely. And like Miles Morales, when he is not yet has become Spider-Man, you know, mm-hmm. he moves at a certain rate in a certain thing, and then they change it later when he becomes
a much faster rate.
He's a more fluid...
Right.
It's tricks that you really have to think outside of the box that, again, the reason I brought all that up is a little bit of a tangent to get to what the point I wanted to say is it's things that can only exist in the medium of animation.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime you get creative people that really have reverence for what the art is that they're doing, the art of animation,
sure.
and have creative ideas and can execute it at that level... I would clap, but it would ruin the auto, but the audio. But like, truly, a round of applause. Like, it's wonderful.
I mean, when you talk about making characters that operate at a different frame rate than everybody else, or have you know, like this one, you know, every other character comes in on the ones and fours. This one comes on the threes and fives.
Right.
You know,
right.
like you to understand that you have to have such an appreciation for the medium. So like, Lords and Miller, like. The fact that they recognize this and are sort of reshaping how that process is done or even doing these things that like we may not recognize them as they happen, but our brain catches them, you know, like it's so subtle that our brain may not be able to pinpoint what exactly is happening, but it notices something's off. Like that is such reverence and understanding of how animation works. It's genius. It really is.
They are.
It's directing brilliance and sort of, I don't want to say reshaping the wheel, but I mean, at least adding chrome on it, you know?
It's things that started...
It's a new perspective?
No, 100%. And it's things that started with this movie, in the Lego movie, which again, has no business being as good as it is. Like,
oh, yeah.
It packs in, like we were talking about with Ted Lasso earlier. You'll be laughing 1 minute, and by the end of this movie, like Lego movie, I've been a bit of an emotional wreck recently. Like, I was almost going to cry. I'm like, damn, did the Lego movie just mess me up again, even though I knew what the emotional
sure.
impact that was coming? Like, it sure did. And so I have a lot of respect for people that truly appreciate their medium, you know. And these guys, like I said, the Lego movie had no business being this good. The 21 Jump Street movie had no business being that good.
Sure.
And I understand that it was a passion project of Jonah Hill as well. He, right guy, right timing, everything. I'm not taking anything away from him. But like, again, like we were saying earlier with Batman, you get these good marriages sometimes, and it's
you get things
that are better than the sum of their parts, and the Lego is 100% that.
It's the juxtaposition of creative people that actually give a shit about the source material, plus investing the time and funding and money and effort into it, and then also having reverence for the source material and sort of being like, you all have seen a version of the thing that we're trying to do. We're just trying to present it in a new way. And we have such reverence and passion for it that you can't help but get sucked up into it as an audience member in terms of like, oh my God, they put so much effort into this.
Yeah, there's no, things just didn't happen. There was no half-ass in it. You know? And it's like we said with comic book movies. What happens when comic book movies work the best is when we have a genre like a Western, you know, but then it just happens to have superheroes in it, like Logan or something. Or, you know, we talked about The Winter Soldier. It's a political thriller that just happens to have Captain America in it.
Or Endgame is essentially a redemption tale.
Right.
It's if I could go back and change one thing in my life, what would it be?
Right. You know? Why I bring all those up is to say that why the Lego movie works is, and it takes, like you said, genius or brilliance at least at the minimum to do something like this. We're going to tell a human story, a very human story about a father and a son, one who's too stringent and is losing his life and also alienating his son by not inviting him to go play Legos with him. We're going to tell a human story about alienation from a dad who's losing his inner child and in the process ignoring his child, and we're going to do that with Legos. Go. And it's like, it's a magic trick to pull off, man.
Yeah, dude.
It's tough. And so all the credit in the world to them for that. And the other thing I wanted to talk about with Legos is because Lego, as a brand, has franchising with everybody. Everybody.
Right,
with
right.
Marvel, with DC, with
Star Wars, with X-Men.
Speed Racer. Everybody. Everybody's got a Lego set. I mean, right. Harry Potter with everything. And this movie dabbles in it a little bit because you get Batman, you get other characters that have come up. You got their own original IP as well. Michael, is the only way that we get our first Marvel DC cross, because Star Wars shows up in this movie too.
Sure,
and
right.
Han Solo does, and Lando is voiced actually by
Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams, right. Yeah, I couldn't think of the name.
You know who did the voice for Han Solo?
Who?
Mark Hamill.
Oh, really? Oh, that is right.
Apparently, he does a really good
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, he does. But my question was: is the only way that we get to like a Marvel versus DC? Is it with the Lego brand attached?
I mean, I'd watch that. I mean, why not? I mean, yes, and please, thank you.
That might be the only way we truly... I mean, there might be a bite at the apple later, but I think it might have to come via Lego. They already have the...
I mean, that would...
Be the shit, yes?
It would, yes. But you're talking about such a monumental shift in policy between both companies. I mean, could it be done in any other medium other than Legos? I don't think so. Like, I don't think that the two animation companies would come together and like, we're going to make a movie together. I don't see that happening. Least of all live action or something like that. I mean, maybe if they both are going bankrupt in terms of like 20 years from now when superheroes have become
maybe James
trite or something like that. Yeah. And they're like, hey, we'll just throw anything against the wall. Like, fuck it. We're going to do the amalgam universe.
Maybe James Gunn makes it happen just via his connections.
He could do it.
Potentially with participation for
Kevin Feige. I would watch a Lego movie directed by James Gunn.
No, I just mean now that he runs DC, he used to work at Marvel. I was talking about live action.
Oh,
like
sure.
Maybe down the road
if his
movies take place. But like, we could truly get what all fanboys want. We could get like a Transformers, Star Wars, Marvel, DC, Harry Potter.
Fast and the Furious.
Fast and Furious, like...
Oh, I want to see Lego...
Like a Lego multiverse?
I want to see Lego Vin Diesel. It's literally the boldest Lego. He doesn't even have the little peg on his head.
That's funny. It's crap.
It's just a round ball. like a little...
Like the little Dunlop.
Like a little off-color pearl.
That'd be funny, dude. if he's allowed to joke on himself. But I'm just saying, that's the only possibility we might have for a true multiverse mashup via Lego. So go support your local Lego movie.
That's right. That's right.
For real, though, I was thinking about that. Like, they do have a license with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you ever play any of the Lego, like, video games?
Again, better than they ever should be.
For sure.
They're a lot of fun.
I will say, as long as you have some sort of appreciation for whatever franchise they're attaching to it, like, I mean, I played the DC Legos. I played the Harry Potter Legos. I played the X-Men and Avengers Legos. I've played, the Indiana Jones, what have you. Like, yeah. All those video games are so good, and they're so simple, and the basic premise, again, is just, like, break down the world in front of you, just go smash blocks, collect studs, the little, like, mm-hmm. Lego bits, and then use that to unlock characters and smash the world more and make new shit. Like, it's brilliant. It's,
I know when they just, like, probably about 4 years ago, 3 years ago, something, they released the, or maybe they just released it for the first time, but the Skywalker.
But the saga, whole trilogy.
The whole, yeah. Yeah, all of the trilogies put right. into one disc. Yeah. That shit sold like gangbusters, man.
Yeah. I have it, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, man. So go support your local Lego stuff. The movie's a magic trick. It emotionally packs a punch. Will Ferrell's actually really good in it. Not that he's like, that sounded like a shot at him, but I'm saying, like, in the live action sequences, he's very believable in terms of being Lord Business.
For being a tertiary character for a third of the movie, I mean, essentially he plays the real world dad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where all the emotional content comes from. I mean, the Lord Business character, like the Lego version, is just Will Ferrell, again, just, like, hey, we want you to Robin Williams this and just spout lines and we'll record and we'll take the best ones. Don't worry about it, Like, right. But the emotional content that he gives in the real world performance, where he connects with his son finally, and he's like, he literally looks around like he's impressed. Like, he's, in a weird way, he's proud of his son in a way that he never expected, in terms of like, oh, you built all this? Like, you just made this up? And the kid's like, yeah, like, and here's Emmett, and he's the main character, and he's trying to save himself from Lord Business. And the dude, he looks, he's like, am I Lord Business?
Yeah, the scene that almost made me cry was when he said, what would, this is at the climax of the film or whatever, which, spoiler alert, but Emmett's on the ground or whatever, and he said, what would, and his dad's starting to realize, like, he said, who is this guy? He's like, no, his son says, well, he's the hero. He goes, no, he's just a construction worker. And we're going to put him back in his constraint. He has to go scrape off some glue off his back. And he starts to realize, like, he's genuinely impressed by his son and the story and the world he's built and everything. And he asks him, he said, what would Emmett say to Lord Business right now in your story? And he hits him with, you don't have to be the bad guy. And that's just like, oh, man, it breaks down your walls. Like, you don't have to be the bad guy, man.
That's right.
Like, we can come together on this. And it's a really silly point to explain this dynamic via Lego figures. It's funny. Like, again, it shouldn't work, but it really packs an emotional punch. And I forgot. I was like, damn it. Got me slipping. Get it together, Marcus.
I'm not crying over Legos.
Yeah,
you are.
I will, though. I'm soft. I don't even care anymore.
Little Lego tears coming out of my eyes.
I know. Little water bricks. Yeah, really good movie, though. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So, you want to rate it?
Oh, man. I'm going to give it 1,581 pieces.
Nice.
1,581 pieces.
I'm going to give it that one hinge point that you need, that you know is in that box somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And then, boy, that sense of relief when you dig through those 10,000 Legos to find that one hinge piece that you knew was in there to complete your brand new imaginative creation. That's what I will give it. A diamond in the rough, as it were.
That's right.
So on that note, anything else?
That's it, brother.
All right. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us. On that note, we would ask you to go watch a movie.
And talk about it with somebody you love.